Hey, Jay.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
Oh.
Mark Barron, happy holidays to you.
Same to you.
Welcome to my podcast. Yeah. Well, that's okay. That'd be mood music.
Well, you have to pay royalties.
I keep forgetting. Okay, so the Passion Pit podcast talks to independent artists about how they've shaped their future and advice and things that they give to those doing exactly the same. Let's talk about you. You're a filmmaker.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me all about it. Tell us all about it.
My partner and I have been working on several film projects for years. The one that we are most active with is... it's a comedy, a feature comedy. It's about computer geeks, the lottery, and the mob, and it's called Mega Balls. And the script is doing well in festivals and contests. We've picked up 18 laurels, and it's a matter of finding the money.
Oh, I hear you.
That's the hard part. Creating art is easy, but financing art is not.
This is not your first film, though.
It is my first producing effort.
First producing effort. Yes.
Now for... since the early 80s, my
right.
business partner got his SAG card on The Godfather.
Wow, okay.
And I am currently serving on the board of SAG-AFTRA, now on it for over 11 years.
Wow.
So I'm not an outsider to the business, but it's the first time of producing my own project.
Indeed. And what's this answer could take you about an hour. What hit you in the face the moment that you did this? What was the learning experience for you? We all say, okay, a film producer. We all have our own stereotype, if you will, of that. What was the hit in the face for you for being a film producer?
I think the best person who ever summed it up was Emilio Estevez, who said this film industry is a cruel business. It's not easy. There's so many things you need to put together before everything comes together. And sometimes it seems like an impossible task. It's like herding drunken kittens.
I've heard of the expression herding kittens. Now they're drunk. Oh, my God.
Now they're drunk, yeah. It's very difficult because the three elements you need to get your project together, first assuming you have a script that there's an audience for,
right,
and you've done all your work on budgeting and all that and, you know, scheduling. But the three elements to make it happen is you need the money.
Of course.
You need the talent that will sell the film, and then you need somebody who's going to put the film out there, distribution. And the money, people want to know who's going to be in the film, which you can understand.
Of course.
But those people that you want to get in a film won't even read the script till you have the money. And then when you go to a distributor, they want to know who's in the film.
There you go.
So you keep running around and trying to get somebody to take a next step of faith. For example, we tell an investor that the money will go into an escrow account, and we can make a simple deal that says, I won't release the money until I have the casting. I mean... then I can go to the actor's reps and say, here's proof of funds, here's the letter that will release the money if I have casting, and then you can start. But it's very tough. And then when you do approach investors, you have to understand that you're not the only thing that is on their plate, and there's plenty of people looking for money, so you have to prove why should you put your money into your project as opposed to what other investments or films or whatever.
Do you find your art is compromised from looking for investors? We always see the joke on so many TV shows where they get the exact wrong actor to be in a show, but they happen to know the producer. Do you find you might have a perfect actor in mind, but in order to get the money, you need a new perfect actor in mind?
I haven't had experience that yet because the few people that we have talked to that were very serious. When we listed the people that we wanted to approach, they seemed to be very happy with that. But the thing is, they also need to understand that once the money comes, maybe those actors are not available.
Right.
And then you have to make a decision. Do you delay the project, hope that and get the actor, or do you move on to another actor? So it's this constant, sea of moving muck. that you have to try to get before it all comes together.
Do you find also now in this world, in this litigious world of triggers and sensitivity? Now you have yours is about computer geeks that might be someone that someone might not appreciate hearing. When you say about the mob, do you find that you have to say, okay, wait a minute, I have to look at people's sensitivities when I'm writing this, or do you feel that art is the most important?
You have to write the story.
Okay,
you can't second guess. Oh, I'm writing this because I want to please an audience. You write the story, and then you need to see if there is an audience for it. I can't go into all the details because I give away the surprises.
Of course.
But like, for example, the concept of the geek or the nerd or however you want to title it, well, two of the biggest shows on television, that's what they're about. You have the Big Bang Theory on broadcast.
Right.
And then you have Silicon Valley, and those are hugely highly rated shows. So that concept is sellable. When you look at the mob genre, over the history of film, it has always been one of the most interesting and responded to genres. Going back to the shoot-'em-up gangster movies of the 30s with James Cagney until the hits of like The Sopranos.
Right.
So there's an audience for that. It was once said that there are only like 9 stories anybody can tell, and Shakespeare told them all.
Yeah.
But the responsibility of the scriptwriter or the story person is to write a unique version based on them.
Right, their own parable.
Right.
So you feel that writing the story, to look in the papers to see who's going to like it and whatever else, that's later on. Right now, it's you write what's in your heart. You write the story.
Right. I mean, as you know, there are some stories that have a small audience, and you have to determine that. And then the trick is, and this is one of the better things I think I've learned over the years, is you need to find out what your potential audience is, and then you budget based on that. So if you've got a great story and whatever, but you find there's a really small audience for, well, then you have to make that very low budget.
Gotcha.
And if there's something that's a larger audience, then you can improve your budget. And then you have to think about casting, because the casting is going to sell certain films. Films like genres such as horror films, slasher films, the genre sells it. So you can just get working actors and not spend a lot of money. But things like comedy, that more than anything any other depends on the casting.
It's interesting you say that.
You have to budget higher so you can afford to get a talent that's going to sell the project.
Do you think yours with Nerds and Mobsters needs the name actors, or do you think the genre themselves will carry it?
In my film, I need the actors because it's a comedy, not because of the mob story.
So the humor pervades in this case.
Yeah. You recognize certain actors have created a brand for themselves that they do comedies. And then there's different types of comedies. Mine is not a Will Ferrell comedy.
Gotcha.
And then there's a couple twists at the end that I don't want to give away, but it's important that when I do cast the so-called mob characters, that I find actors that generally portray that character, because now the audience accepts that.
Very cool. Very cool. Great. Well, that's insight that I'm sure a lot of people are going to care about, because there's so many stage artists I know who are looking to transfer ideas and themselves to film. So I think you've just provided a lot of valuable insight. And speaking of stage artists, you also have a major credential for yourself in terms of working with theatrical artists. You're the shepherd of the lambs, or president, as we might call it out here in the real world. The president, if you will, of the lambs. Tell us about that. You just had a portrait painted of yourself. Oh, you lucky man. What's it like being a... Well, there you go. What's it like being the head of the lambs?
Oh, that's a 2-hour conversation. The lambs is, for those listening who are not familiar, it is the oldest professional theatrical organization in the country. It was founded in New York in 1874. based on a similar organization that started in London in 1869. And the Lambs has a history that is unparalleled to any other of its kind. It is a social club. That's what it was founded. But out of that, many things occurred. For example, it was Lambs who founded the Actors Fund. Hmm. It was Lambs who founded ASCAP actually within the Lambs Club building.
Wow.
It was Lambs that founded Paramount Pictures. They were part of the it was Lambs that founded Actors Equity. It was Lambs.
The Lambs founded Actors Equity.
Well, not the Lambs, but members of the Lambs.
Oh, members of, well, yeah.
The Players Club, which is our sister club in a way. We're not connected, but we're similar. The Players is not as old as the Lambs, and the founder of the Players used to belong to the Lambs and decided to form his own club with a slight difference to it. But the there is a room in the Players Club where they love to point out how in that room is where Actors Equity formed, which is correct. But what they don't mention is everybody in the room was a member of the Lambs. Because at that point, the Lambs clubhouse was right in Times Square. So it was right in the heart of the theater district. And many of its members were producers and theatrical managers, and they didn't want a union form, so they couldn't have those meetings in the Lambs building. So they secreted down to the Players Club, the sister organization, if you will, where they had the meeting. And of the first 22 council members of Equity, 21 were Lambs, as were the president and the treasurer.
Oh, my gosh.
Then later, when you had the actor strike, the Lambs was considered ground zero. That's where the battles went on. By the way, Actors Equity, the actual name was coined by the shepherd of the Lambs then, William Portley.
Gosh, that's
And then when the actors, the big strike happened in 1919, the Lambs was the battleground, and we lost members because there were members like George M. Cohen was furious that members, his fellow members would support a union because he was a producer.
Of course.
And the strike was eventually settled by the then shepherd of the Lambs, who was, his name was Augustus Thomas, and he was a writer that both sides trusted.
That's
then
great.
We also had members who were part of the founding of Screen Actors Guild, part of founding of AFRA, part of the two Lambs founded United Artists, and then even most recently, 7 years ago, when SAG and AFTRA merged into a new union, we had three members involved in that. Also, Lerner and Lowe met at the Lambs Club, so Fred Lowe left us a piece of Brigadoon royalties that fueled the Lambs Foundation, which has been now in its 75th year of supporting education in the arts and nonprofit theater.
Well, so the Lambs, when you really get down to it, is the foundation of the arts in general, if you will. It's like one of the cornerstones of the profession completely.
Well, what I like to tell people, we do offer talks to groups where we come out and do about a 1 hour presentation on a brief history. But what I like to tell people is that anybody's ability to earn a living as a professional in theater, in film, in music, owes part of that to the Lambs or members of the Lambs.
That's perfectly put. That's really great.
We've actually been starting to campaign. I don't know if it can be any it'll bear any fruit, but we're trying to get the Lambs to be recognized with an honorary Tony Award. In recognition of the contribution. The Lambs, unfortunately, went through some dark days in the mid-70s. We lost the beautiful building that we had. We wandered for a year, then we relocated to where we are now. We don't own the building, but we're a tenant. But it suits us fine, and it allows us to keep our membership dues much lower than any other similar club.
Like, and it's a stunning space. When I first went in there, I couldn't stop craning my head to see the gorgeous portraits, to see the memorabilia, to see the beautiful surroundings. It's an absolutely stunning location.
And the whole point of the Lambs and the Friars and the Players all is we're social clubs where you can mingle with other people that are in the industry. The Lambs, we're the lowest priced, and we're focused more on what I call the working actor, which is the actor who doesn't work too often.
Uh-huh.
And so we do everything we can to make it affordable. We have a lot of events, 2-3 a week at times. Most of the events are free or a small donation. The only time there's a larger charge is when there's food involved, because then we have to pay for the catering.
Of course.
And we're all volunteers. We don't have a paid-for staff. So all that allows us to keep our annual dues rate lower than most other clubs in New York.
I'm thinking of the ginger way of putting it. You mentioned the Friars Club. A lot of people know the Friars Club. They seem to have built. What's the difference in terms of the Friars and the Lambs?
Well, I'd like to quote George S. Kaufman in 1940 wrote that the Lambs were a bunch of actors pretending to be gentlemen. The Players were a bunch of gentlemen pretending to be actors. And the Friars were neither trying to be both. The Friars is the youngest of the three clubs. It was not originally formed as a club for entertainment people necessarily, but it morphed into a club, and it was best known as an organization for comedians and Las Vegas entertainers, magicians,
okay,
and comedians and singers. The Players was formed as a club where actors could mingle with other non-theatrical professionals, possible patrons like doctors and lawyers.
Right.
And the Lambs was founded as a club for people. Then it was just theater, because that's all there was, but for professionals in entertainment and the arts.
You have just answered a huge question right there. I always see, whenever I see anything to do with the Friars, I will always see a grand old comedian up there saying something. You have Georgie Jessel was known for it. I recently saw Larry Storch in a photograph there. Now it makes sense. Oh, of course, it's for the comedians. But if you're looking for something more serious, well then you head out to the Lambs.
Well, the Players, which each has a different flavor. The Lambs was founded in Union Square at what was then Delmonico's. In fact, the owner Delmonico was a Lamb. But as the Lambs membership increased, they kept moving and moving and moving, and they would follow theater, which was moving from Union Square to eventually to Times Square. So over the course of, we are currently in our 14th location. One of the more famous ones was Keene's Chop House on 36th Street. We bought that from Keene. Stanford White remodeled it, and when we outgrew it, we sold it back to Keene's.
Oh, that's funny.
The Players, on the other hand, has always been in the same building. So the appeal there, when you walk in, you're walking into a century-old building.
Right. And it was it John Barrymore? No, it wasn't John Barrymore's home.
It was Edwin Booth.
That's right. Okay. John Barrymore just lived there or something like that, if I remember correctly.
It was his home, and
okay,
he eventually formed a club and left it to the club.
Okay.
And Edwin Booth used to come to the Lambs. He joined the Lambs, and then he decided to form his own club to be a little bit different.
So you were even the jumping-off point for both of those when you really get down to it.
Oh, yeah. In fact, on our website, we kind of find connections to a lot of organizations that, for example, there was a female-based theater club called the 12th Night Club. And I was always looking to see what the connection was there. And I went to one of their events, and they were doing readings of like the first couple of meetings of minutes from their history going back. I forgot what year they formed. They're not as old as the Lambs. But anyway, they were formed by wives of Lambs who wanted their own club to go to, because most of these clubs used to be for men only.
Right.
So while Lambs were not specifically related to the founding of the 12th Night Club, it was wives of Lambs who founded it.
That's so funny. That's so funny. So no matter where you dig, you're going to find a Lamb.
It does seem that way.
What do we get when we join? I'm honored to be a Lamb, and I extol that to whenever I can. Tell our listeners what they get when they join the flock.
Well, you first of all, you have the facilities. We're located in a townhouse. Off Fifth Avenue between St. Patrick's and Radio City. So you have a midtown location. We don't own the building, but there are facilities for us within the building. For example, there are 26 hotel rooms at member rates. There is a pub that operates Monday to Friday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Hmm. Great place to go for meetings and talk business because nobody's rushing you off your table.
Right.
The building does have full catering services. They have several very large rooms. So we've had members have their weddings there, and they get a discounted rate from the building. And then the Lambs itself rents a floor on the building where there are three rehearsal spaces, a performance space, a pool room, artwork. There's a library of over 700 scripts. We have a music library that we're now going through to organize, where we wouldn't be surprised to find out we must have 7,000-8,000 copies of sheet music. There's the artwork. We have a variety of events. We have a weekly gathering. It's like a happy hour. We put on a little impromptu show. We do an assortment of events during the week. You mentioned Larry Storch. We're doing an evening with Larry Storch in January. We're doing an evening in February with Helen Gallagher.
Oh, wow.
We've had authors come and talk about their books, usually related to theater and entertainment. Last year, we had the daughter of Donna Reed come in, and we did a screening of It's a Wonderful Life, and she talked about that. So we have a variety. We're starting next year a monthly film series where we're going to be showing films and discussing them, but each one has to be connected to the Lambs.
Right.
So, for example, we're going to start off with Brigadoon, since Lerner and Lowe wrote it, and they were Lambs, Lambs. And then we have a woman, Amy Ash, who just recently put out a book about Alan J. Lerner, and she's going to come in and talk about the Brigadoon and Lerner and Lowe. So it's a full-fledged evening talking about the film. We have scheduled a bunch of films for that.
That's cool.
We do, in the summer, we do a barbecue that we put on a show for the Actors Fund home out in Englewood, New Jersey. We had to skip a couple of years because they were redoing their space, so we're mm-hmm. told that this year that's going to be back on.
Great.
We just had a big Christmas party. Whatever we can come up with, as long as we got members willing to put a little time in to make it happen, we can make it happen.
That's extraordinary. That's really extraordinary. I'm going to make sure our listeners know exactly how to get in touch with you, how to get in touch at the Lambs to join, because this is marvelous. This is the founder of history. Forget about being a piece of history. The Lambs, we wouldn't be who we are without the Lambs.
Well, we have a pretty extensive website, which is thelambs.org, and that's hyphenated, /Lambs. And I caution readers, if you search for the Lambs Club, you can get a false hit where you're going to find a restaurant owned by Jeffrey Zakarian on 44th Street, which is located in the building that we left 42 years ago.
Okay.
There's no connection to the two organizations, but they managed to finagle a deal with a past president to use the name, which does not benefit the Lambs, because legally the Lambs, the Friars, and the Players, the word club is not a part of our name.
Interesting.
Our trademark names are the Lambs, the Players, the Friars.
Right.
But we're clubs, and people always say, oh, the Lambs Club, the Players Club. And so thereby there's the confusion of that restaurant.
Very interesting. I was thinking of a genteel way of saying, don't go down to the Lambs Club and apply.
Yeah, and we get problems because we'll do an event where we do welcome non-members, and some of them go to the wrong place because they forgot where they were going, and they look it up on Google, and it sends them to the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just far enough away that you can't run over very fast.
Right, right.
This is amazing. This is amazing. Mark, thank you very much. I will make sure our listeners know, if they're interested more about your movie, what they need to do to engage you.
And that is our website. Is the name of the project is Mega Balls, which we arrived at by combining Powerball and Mega Millions, the two big lotteries.
It's also what you need to produce a film, let me tell you.
Yeah. And the website is megaballsmovie.com.
Megaballsmovie.com. Or if you wish to join the most historic organizations in New York, you join thelambs.org.
TheLambs.org, and it's hyphenated, the hyphen Lambs.
TheLambs.org. Mm-hmm. Absolutely terrific. Mark, thank you so much. I'll be in touch in the new year, and let's scream from the highest rafter to make sure people know about both great things that you're involved in.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you. Have a joyous new year. I will talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.